You're listening to the Music Manumit Podcast for June 5th, 2011. Learn more at musicmanumit.com. Hi, and welcome to another Music Manumit. I am Tom, and with me is Doug. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Tom.
And today we have some guests. We have two guests today. I think this is our first dual guest show.
It's the first dual guest show that you've been involved in.
You're right. I missed the, but that was a triple guest show. That was the, you're talking about the Headphonica interview.
Yeah, that's true. So this is our first dual guest show.
Yes. And today we have joining us, I'm going to say, I always want to say Dan, but I know that it's Dave, right? Dave Lee and
right,
Carolina Lee. And it was one of those things you from Bugcast before I get into my thing here. We'd like to thank you for joining us. It's one of those things where before we did the show, I was like, don't call him Dan. First thing I thought of when you came on was, hi, Dan. And also, did I say Carolina?
You did.
Uh-huh.
That was the second part of what I was going to say. Don't say that. So it's
Dave. Worry, I get Carolina, Carolyn, Caroline, Carol.
Kaz.
Yes, Kaz.
How do you get Kaz?
It's a shortened way of doing it, and I don't mind Kaz too much. I'm not really, I don't particularly like it, but the only one I really don't like is Kaggy.
Ooh.
I think it's horrible.
That is. I don't. People just shouldn't even think
only one
that.
Person ever tried to say that to me, and they got a short slap, so I never did it again. So.
Well, you're joining us here from the Bugcast, and I guess first thing I want to do is.
Tom, I'm going to interrupt you for just a second.
Of course.
I think Caroline is our first female guest as well.
Is she?
I think so.
I think so. I'm trying. Yeah, I believe you're right. No. I'm gonna agree with you on that one.
Well.
All right. Look at that. This is all around. We're just
breaking new ground.
Yeah, on our own show. So I was just going to say, why don't you tell the good people listening what the Bugcast is? Tell us a little about yourself.
Okay, well, we are a weekly podcast that we do live. So we record it between 9:30 UK time with a live chat room, and pretty much what we do goes out. And we do a selection of music, chat, and other stuff, talk about like topical things, but we tend to do about 6 or 7 tracks, and then either talk about what's going on in our life or whatever we've seen in the news that's bugged us.
No pun intended.
Oh, that didn't even occur to me, but thank you for pointing that out.
It wasn't until I said it. So it's over 3 years now. But yes. I wasn't originally a co-host. I was usually a background interference.
He finally just said, look, if you're going to hover around, you might as well just be on.
That's exactly what happened, yes. I mean, not to say that Caroline isn't a background interference even now.
But now I've got my own microphone.
when the podcast first started back in March 2008, it was just me. And it was just something I wanted to try out. Mm. There's a couple of friends of mine that did podcasts as well. And I thought, if they can do it, I can do it. I had a bit of history and background in the audio production arena. And I thought, you know, I can do this. So I got my laptop, got some software, got a headset, and did the first episode. And I thought it came out really well from a non-technical perspective. Technically, I thought it was awful. Mm. But I said to people, you know, this is going to go out. If you like it, let me know. I'll do another one. And I did actually get some feedback from people saying, yeah, do another one. So 162 episodes later.
Yes. You had Unwatch at the beginning, though, didn't you?
Yes. I still am, actually, quite bad or good, depends on which way you look at it, at saying to fill the gaps.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I want to say that you only notice it yourself if you happen to be editing it. And, you know, it's hard to say, but that was one of the first things I know Doug pointed out when we first started the show was that we were going to try and not say or but you just kind of go with it. I mean, you really just can't keep, you know, second guessing yourself the whole time, you know?
Exactly, particularly if your mouth's going faster than your brain is. Your brain runs out of things to say.
That is the way I roll.
You've got to fill the gap in somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that normally gets us some of our most fun pars, doesn't it? When we do faux pars and.
Yes, I mean the mistakes. They're all part of what makes the show. I used to edit them out, and this is where I became very much aware of how non-flowing the show used to be back in its infancy.
Mm-hmm.
As Caroline said, we used to do this thing called unwatch, where somebody would go through and count how many times I said or during the course of a standard show, and in just a half hour show. I think the peak was something like 73 times.
Wow.
I'd managed to say, I know it's terrible, isn't it? I've managed to say just within that short show.
I have a friend who did a video, I don't know if it would be a video journal or something. It was just a short video that he did talking about how he was moving on from one business to another. And one of his friends that he worked with edited the video and did a remix of it. What he did is he took out all the talking parts and just did the ums and ers. And then posted the video as a comment of it. And the video was actually probably about maybe a quarter of the time of the original video. And it was all just ums and ers. I thought that was pretty brilliant when I saw it.
I can't remember whether it's one of our listeners or one of our fellow podcasters actually took one of the shows that I did and pulled out all the ums, ers, and erms and burps and other such things. I think it came out to about a minute and a half.
Yes,
and of consistent. I'm trying to remember whether it was. In fact, it was either Ken Turetsky.
It was Ken Turetsky
who did one of them. The other one was Pete Kogel from PC Podcast, but I can't remember whether. He just did a.
Yeah, I think it was Ken Turetsky because now you said the name. It
was Ken Turetsky, the.
But I mean, we have recently
the musician.
We have recently started. Doing live video stream as well as the live podcast, which is
really
adding a new element of hilarity. Yes.
See, now, are you actually making those videos available, or are you just doing it like while you're on?
They're actually on. They're on Ustream.
Ustream. Oh, that's right. It does record it, doesn't it?
Using.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which it's quite amusing to sit back and watch what you've done. Not just because I mean I always listen to the shows. I've done them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're watching them, you're hearing what you would normally hear, but you're also seeing us playing air guitar and air drums and having outright domestics here in this room that you wouldn't normally have seen. It's quite intrusive in a way, but I think it just adds that little bit of extra something.
Just your way of stopping me doing the background interviews that I used to do.
There is that as well. I don't know where, sort of what level this particular podcast is, whether you allow questionable material.
I mean...
one of the things that Caroline used to do when she was just a background interference was she'd come into the room, she'd get my attention, and then she would just lift the top up to see if I would react or get put off by it.
Uh-huh.
And yes, 9 times out of 10, it did completely put me off my stride.
Really? You couldn't hold your own? I'm disappointed. You couldn't power through that?
I don't know how to answer that because I could go into more detail and completely embarrass Caroline. Or I could just say, no, I couldn't.
Okay.
Fair enough. I have a short attention span. That's all I can say.
Gotcha. Now I'm trying to think of how to segue.
So, I have a segue, Tom. So,
okay.
Potentially on the scale of, you know, potentially off-color stuff, you guys had or are having some sort of pod crawl. I was just curious how that went.
Okay. Pod crawl is something we've only been involved in for the last couple of years. And I've just said didn't I? Count that one. it's basically a bringing together of podcasters. And this is the fourth one we've been to, 3 in London, 1 in Sheffield, which was last autumn. And literally a group of podcasters, some musicians, some listeners, just going to the same place in a pub, having some beers, and, you know, it's a social event. Nothing really more than that. It's not. We don't talk shop. I don't think we've ever had a podcast where we've actually talked shop. Have we, Sweetheart?
apart from recording the Made in UK segments.
Yeah, but that's more...
Probably the first
more
one.
More in addition to it.
The first one, because one of the podcasters was leaving the association but carrying on podcasting because of something or other. We talked a lot of shop that time. But normally, it's pretty much a bit of everything. And
okay, I'm curious about that story, if it's something that can be shared.
I would say not, actually. We might talk to you. Talk to you outside of this, it was a very unfortunate case of politics that basically.
Well, I want all of our listeners to fill in the gap with the most sordid tale that they possibly can, and just pretend that's what happened. So
yeah, and then write in and tell us what you come up with.
Yes,
that's a great idea.
That sounds good.
The problem is when they do that, the actual truth is never as exciting as all the things that came up.
Well, that's why we're going to have them make the real stories, because we didn't get the actual story, so we can just go with whatever the best one is.
It really depends on how open-minded your listener base is, that how good these stories could actually be.
That's true.
I would claim that they're open-minded, but I mean, how can you really tell? You know, it's you can only assume they're open-minded. So I'm going to say yes, they are. And if they're not, then this is a call to order that they need to be open-minded. That's how it works, right?
We have Amsterdam Mac in by proxy, the Betty Two people in Amsterdam. Amsterdam seems to be a pretty open-minded place. So
you think?
We'll just say that they're open-minded, and we'll give them the stereotype.
They have pot bars. I think they're open-minded.
they might not be. They might be like the militant fascist right of Amsterdam. You know, there's probably like four of them, but maybe all four of them are listeners.
Maybe.
I'm just saying. I'm trying to be open-minded about this, Tom.
Not me. It takes too much effort. I just think what I want.
So speaking of community, how was you guys community? Because it sounds like, I mean, you're doing things like the pub crawl or the pod crawl, I think actually is what you guys were calling it, and doing the live show. You know, that builds some community, obviously. So how do you feel like that situation arises?
That's a difficult one, because if we were to try and describe the community that we have, I would call it focused. That's a very diplomatic way of saying fairly small. We don't actually have that big a following. And you'd think that after sort of 3.5 years or 3 and a bit years, we would have a fairly decent following. But the following we do have is fairly strong. And they are consistent. And some of them have actually been with us since the very first episode.
And I wanted to ask you, too, I was thinking about this before. A lot when you said that you knew other people that were doing it when you first started and you thought you could do that, or have any of them fallen subject to the dreaded pod fading?
Yes, no. Okay. You must have realized that when you started this interview, you were never going to get a straight answer out of us at all. The two podcasters that were the inspiration for me starting the Bugcast, one of them was a show called The Dumbed Down Life. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a group of three people, of which one person's never there. And they just play a couple of tracks, maybe three tracks, and talk about stuff that's happened in that week or that period of time.
So, for clarity, is that person like literally not there, or are they mentally not there?
I don't think he listens to this. I'd say probably both, and I think his compatriots would probably agree.
I like the fact that you just assume that he doesn't listen to us, you bastard.
I don't know. He lives in America. I don't know where, but he's an expat. He used to be here in the UK, but he moved out to get married to his lady wife. But anyway, going back to the Dumbed Down Life, they've been going since December 2007. So when I started the Bugcast, they were only on, I don't know, 15 episodes. And they'd done them weekly. And they started doing the live shows before I did. And in fact, it was them starting their live shows that prompted me to do my start my live show. My first live show was number 24. Excuse me. And then they got to about 80 something, which was a quite an arduous journey because they kept stopping and starting and stopping and starting. And I think when you get to the, when you get out of the habit of podcasting, trying to get back into it is very difficult. Mm-hmm. And I've discovered that by, I think the longest week, longest gap we've had between podcasts was about a week and a half. Yeah. Sorry, 2.5 weeks.
Because we weren't very well, then we were on
holiday. Then we were on holiday, yeah. But we managed to then squeeze another one in midweek to try and catch up. And trying to get back into the flow of podcasting, even after a week's gap, is extremely difficult.
Hmm. Do you feel that way, Tom?
It can be. I could see the fact that it's easier just not to do it. You can go, oh, maybe I just won't do it. But then you go, I'll be saying that all the time. And yeah, it's once we start, I'm always really happy we did it. But like right before, I'm like, oh, I got to stop what I'm doing in the day and, you know, set up and all that kind of stuff. And, but then once you get doing it, I feel like I'm happy I did it. But I could see totally getting out of it.
I guess it depends on what I guess it depends on the reason for not doing it. Like if it's planned in advance, like somebody's on vacation or something like that. I don't know. To me, that just seems like I don't have any problems with that. But I guess if you're just like busy and you're like, you know what, we're not doing it because I don't feel like it.
Right.
Then that's the time when it's like, well, I don't feel like it again. So we didn't do it last time.
Yeah, and I'll say...
Because we've missed a couple, Tom, right? I mean, or at least we missed one when I was in South Africa. I know that.
Yeah. And then just last week. I think are the only two we've missed.
Yeah.
If I'm not
mistaken. We can't skip now, though, because we have like 5 interviews lined up.
Yeah, that's the beauty part. I like it. There was one thing, like we get a lot of interviews set up, which is awesome. We get to talk to nice people like yourselves. And we get to meet lots of interesting people. I like how you thought that I was there was a motive to me saying that with the
No. I was just saying that keeps us trucking because even if we were like, I don't feel like doing this, then we're like, well, you know, it'd look crappy to cancel on somebody.
Right. And what I was going to say too is remember that one week when we did it where we found out we didn't have an interview and we just kind of shot the shit for an hour and it was like,
yeah,
oh,
that
was
pretty
really
good
easy.
Yeah. It was one of our shorter shows, I think, but at the same time, we put in a good, like, solid 35 minutes or something.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we have other people here, don't we?
Yeah, now that we don't have any segue at all, I want to get back to one of those basics questions. The Bugcast.
Can I just ask a question about a segue?
Yeah.
What is the segue? What do you mean by segue? Because to me, a segue is a weird thing that people...
Wheel, one of those little vehicles.
A
segue being the way that something would relatably transition into another conversation that we were going to bring up.
So I'll stop having mental pictures of you on some weird two.
No, I do have one of those that you should picture me riding on while I'm doing that because it'll be that once again would be a segue what I'm describing here. So when you think that, then just like on the show Scrubs or Family Guy or something, we flash to another scene where I'm doing that and there's some happy music in the background like da-na-na-na-na-na-na, you know, and I'm riding around and then it flashes right back to where you were. So every time I say segue, that's what's happening.
That's interesting. I wonder if this is like sort of a melting pot thing in the U.S. because Segway comes from Italian, and maybe there's not the Italian influence in the U.K. that there is here.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just pondering that.
See,
myself.
Now
anyway,
he went off into his own little world there too. So something else is going
to
be.
Well, see, what happened is as soon as she said Segway, I went off to Wikipedia and got the Segway article. So once you're on Wikipedia, it's just that's just bad news for staying on topic.
If I ever
segue turns into a tangent,
yeah, and tangent continued. If I ever have enough money, I want to buy a town and name it one of two things. One, I either want to name it Wanakee because here in Wisconsin we have a town called Wanakee, which claims that it's the only Wanakee in the world. So I want to name it Wanakee just to piss them off, or. I want to name a town Wikipedia, so when people say go to Wikipedia, they'll have to clarify that they mean online. There we go. Okay, now we may continue with the actual show in progress.
Did I ever get my sentence out?
No, you didn't.
No.
You, okay, you did not.
No, that's fine. I was just going to ask where the name the Bugcast comes from.
I think that's me. Okay. I wrote a blog post on this absolutely yonks ago. My nickname online is the Love Bug. Now, I'm not going to go into the really long, elongated story as to where it came about, but it kind of stems back to when I was on CB radio back in the late 80s, early 90s. And that was my nickname, and it's always stuck. So when I transitioned from the airwaves to the internet, the nickname stuck. And everything you look at on the internet, if you look up the Love Bug, one word, you'll find me.
And
which I think is great.
I'm musical with a double O because I'm musically minded, and like cartoon cows in between us, we get called Moobug.
Yes.
When we got married, we had a cow and ladybird on our wedding cake rather than a bride and groom, and half the people got it and half the people didn't, and the half that got it were our friends and the half that didn't were our family.
So
on the subject of tangents.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
Oh, okay. No, I was just going to say, so the Love Bug, now you're saying it was CB radio stuff, which, by the way, nerd. And the... but was it because...
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Was it because of the movie Herbie the Love Bug?
No, but it fits nicely.
I was hoping it would be.
I honestly cannot remember the genuine reason why I picked that name.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was a reason back in 1900 and whenever.
My time you've had a real trouble with it is when there was that big virus thing came out and it was somebody called the Love Bug and
really?
He was inundated by people saying, was that you? It's like, no.
No, it wasn't.
That's kind of like when I had to go down to, where was it? New Orleans or in that, you know, that area of Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And I had to go visit for work. And we had, and originally I was going to be going, traveling with a coworker whose name was Katrina. And we were saying, Katrina's going to be coming down there. And this was after the whole hurricane, earthquake, or whatever thing that went through there. So that was very sure. They actually.
Do we name earthquakes now?
I don't know what it was. You know what I'm saying.
You name earthquakes, apparently.
Why would we name hurricanes but not earthquakes? That doesn't make sense. Hurricanes deserve to be named. Earthquakes happen. Earthquakes because, are things.
Do they get named by the person who's discovered them, or do they just get a random name?
I think they do it in alphabetical order.
Yes,
they,
that's wrong.
They just start in alphabetical order. Well, there's only like 20 some odd hurricanes a year, Tom, and there's earthquakes like every day. So we'd run out of letters really quickly.
But you can also predict hurricanes, whereas you can't necessarily predict earthquakes.
And there are millions of stars, Doug, and we name those.
But we don't name all of them. I guess that's a fair point, though. We could just name some of the earthquakes.
I have a patch of the moon.
You have a patch of the moon?
I did. Actually, yes, I did. For one of our wedding anniversaries quite a few years back, I bought Caroline an acre of the moon. Now, obviously, we know that's total crap.
I was going to say.
It sounded good at the time. And it only cost me 20, let's give it in your language, about 40 bucks. So.
Thank you for translating.
That's a bargain.
That, so you're not up there like, you know, going, oh, we can put some garden gnomes over here and... You know, kind of checking it out and seeing, you know, for when we do move up there, or you look at it in the telescope and go, yeah, that patch right there looks like it might be a problem. I don't know if we'll be able to grow anything there.
Yeah, travel's a bit expensive.
Yeah,
in like 30 years, when you're actually going to check out this acre, we're going to call you on how you didn't think it was ever going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's fixed in time now.
Yeah, that's the one
like
where...
It's like a charged... tax for having an acre of moon.
I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this, but you know full well that if we ever do go to the moon and find our patch of the acre of moon, some Germans put their beach towel on it already. Sorry, Germans.
I don't know. We don't get Germans with beach towels here, as far as I'm aware. So you're going to have to explain that one.
I think it's just a generic stereotype, for which I do apologize, where whenever there's a sun lounger at a hotel or on the beach, the Germans are allegedly always out first to put the towels on them so that the British can't get them.
Oh.
I don't think it's specifically just for the British not getting them. I think it's just in general they bag the best ones.
We're the only ones who take it personally, though. Basically.
Just shaking your fist in the air, damn them! All right. So now I'm going to reel this one back in.
Good luck.
Now, you said that your show consists of you playing music as well. Now, I think one of the reasons we had you on the show, because normally this is what we talk about, is Creative Commons. And you play Creative Commons music, I assume, on your show, correct?
We do, yes.
All right. And what drew you to Creative Commons?
Not all Creative Commons. Just not to confuse people, but
okay. That's what I wanted to ask.
Some isn't.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. I wanted because I wasn't quite sure. I couldn't really tell if it was
but
all or none.
With that said, you guys are sort of the most prominent submitters of tracks to cchits.net, who we had on John. I don't know, a couple months ago, not two or three months ago. So obviously there is some leanings towards Creative Commons, if for no other reason than it's easy to find and you know it's pod safe. So,
I was just going to say, which it didn't used to be, especially around the time that you started your show. There were not a lot of resources for finding it.
Exactly. When I first started the Bugcast, I used one music source, which was the PodSafe Music Network. Mm-hmm. And I figured, it's PodSafe. I can use pretty much anything that's on there. And I did. And because a lot of the music that I got from there was fairly decent, I never thought about venturing elsewhere. I heard of Jamendo. I knew what Jamendo was, but it wasn't as easy to find stuff on Jamendo as it was on, for example, PodSafe Music Network. So I tried it. I think I pulled a track down from there. Oh, must have been within the first 6 months, and then didn't go back because it wasn't as easy to find stuff. And then as time went on, I started looking at other music sources, like, for example, Aero Publicity, who are a fantastic focused publicity company where they will actually tell me about artists rather than me having to go to a website and find out about them. So that was great because I actually had a nice trickle of artists coming into me that I could then audition. It wasn't until, I don't know, probably about a year, maybe a year and a half ago that I went back to Jamendo, because a lot of the podcasts I listened to used Jamendo quite extensively. And even then, I just saw it as another source of good music. The concept of Creative Commons and what it actually stood for hadn't entered my head by that point. And it probably, I'd say probably between the last 6 to 9 months is when Creative Commons has really come home for us. Really, the only true Creative Commons music source we do use is Jamendo, but we don't use Jamendo exclusively. We still keep some of the PodSafe Music Network, or what do they call it nowadays? Mevio's Musical.ly.
Yeah.
Although not as much. There's probably maybe half to one track a week on average. Yeah. Aero Publicity, we do use a lot because the quality is better because they choose the tracks rather than Jamendo just being a
CC Mixter.
CC Mixter, we've taken a couple of tracks from, but again, recently when we realised what Creative Commons
actually
was.
And then we get a lot
was.
Direct from the artists, don't we?
Yeah. So in terms of the journey to Creative Commons, it was organic. It wasn't a, you've got to try this out, this is the reason why, this is the whole concept behind it, and it makes more sense. It's just that there were some cracking tunes on there, and that's where it started.
You guys should check out the Free Music Archive, because they have sort of the same sort of... Tom and I recently became curators over there, and there's a bunch of different curators, but it's the same sort of thing where musicians aren't just dumping music. There's people that are saying, hey, we like this, or maybe we don't like it, but it's really interesting, so we sort of like it from a intellectual point of view, maybe not just for listening. There's a lot of like noise stuff on there, but it's easy to navigate via genre and stuff and not listen to the noise. And Cha-ching, we actually have the first blog post on it as of the moment.
The featured blog post.
The featured blog post. So if you go to freemusicarchive.org, blog post I wrote is the first thing up there. Probably will not be the case by the time people listen to this.
Right.
But.
And I would like to say from what Doug said too, that's how I discovered Free Music Archive. one of the curators that was on there, a guy that runs Block Sonic, I believe, is the guy that did it. It's an online sort of it's technically a podcast, but it's really like he puts out Creative Commons compilations. Like he puts them together as you remember. Did you guys have KTEL Records in England? Do you remember those?
In the 1970s, yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know how what it was? Is it was just like the hits of today all on one album, and they would have a commercial that was all themed, like either people walking on a beach or them in a dune buggy, you know, depending on what kind of music they were doing.
That's right. They were almost the one of the first companies to bring out compilation albums.
Yes. Well, that's essentially what he's doing with Creative Commons Music, and he will also theme it and like make an entire PDF like jacket sleeve with themed artwork for whatever the music type that's on there is. And he featured my band on there once, and then he also uploads all that to Free Music Archive, and I was getting all this traffic from it, and I'm like, what the hell's this? And I went there and saw it and learned all about it, and that's exactly how I came across the Free Music Archive. So it's it's like a place where it's kind of like a library of music that you would find in like a college radio station, like just stuff that's put up there is like that is the way I would describe it.
Yeah, their college radio stations may not be like ours, though.
Sure, they are.
We have
some community radio stations, some of which are run by.
Actually, what I would say is your radio stations are probably what our college radio stations are like, because I think we try to copy the British music scene half the time when we're doing our college or independent radio stations. So,
yeah, baby.
Speaking about that mixtape thing, one of the things I do a lot of creative writing and things, and I'm on a few communities where it's like all challenges based on different genres. So I'm on one for all to do with BBC dramas, and I've on one for like Torchwood and Doctor Who. Mm. One of the challenges we had to do was a fan mix, which lots of people did by ripping off mainstream music and creating their own sleeves and whatnot. I did it completely with Creative Commons, so not only did I get to advertise the podcast at the podcast, I advertised all the musings as well, and a lot of them didn't know about Creative Commons when I did that. And I think that's what I think a lot of people just don't know enough about Creative Commons, that they don't have to steal music. They can actually access reasonable, you know, artists legitimately.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And so you're saying that you wrote it and then it had music.
No,
Or you performed it?
No,
or?
It was basically the challenge was you had to do a mixtape for a TV show of your choice. So I chose the UK version, and then I chose Creative Commons tracks, and I had to explain why you chosen the tracks and how it related to the show. So I put it all together, but it was all Creative Commons people, apart from two which were Podsafe. So what I did with that is rather than giving them links to Jamendo, I gave them links to their MySpace or whatever, so they had to go and seek it out rather than being able to download it.
Oh, that was cool.
But I think if there's any more fan mix ones, again, I would do the Creative Commons and try and get more people knowing about it.
I think there's a general ignorance about Creative Commons and a lack of understanding of A, whether it exists, or even B, why it exists. Jamendo, which obviously you guys would be fairly familiar with, they brought out an application. Sorry, I should call it an app for Android. And when I first found out about the app, I went to download it. And I always, whenever I download an app from my phone, I always look at the comments. And two out of every three comments said, "This is crap. Didn't hear anybody I know."
Oh, that's fantastic! I love that.
Completely and totally missing the point.
Yeah.
Of Windows Ashley 4.
Uh huh.
I don't know. Maybe they're really into CC music, and then they're just not hearing the music that they know.
I highly doubt that.
I have to say, there's a lot of stuff that I don't know when I like listen to those different stations on Jamendo. I'm like, oh, I never heard of this. What's that?
Well,
I like that, but
when I first got into CC music and not really understanding where or what things were when it was happening online, that was my first reaction when I joined e-music. You know, because everything was the download 25 tracks for free for becoming a member and whatever. And I didn't realize that e-music was essentially independent artists, and it wasn't like you couldn't go there and get like the, why am I instantly thinking of Madonna. Couldn't get the instant Madonna
album. That's
because
she's on SoundCloud.
That's right. That's why I'm thinking of it. But that was my confusion in it, because I was trying to turn my dad onto online music and getting MP3s and, you know, having, because he kept wanting me to burn CDs for him. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it anymore. You just lose them. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So
talking about Madonna made me think to ask you two if you guys heard our or Tom's like 15-minute introduction to the last show that was about the royal wedding, because I'm sure that you guys would be humored by that.
No, I'm actually well behind on podcast listening at the moment. I've got 26 different podcasts on my pod roll, and I think I'm about a month behind. So I will get there eventually, but I'm not quite there yet.
Maybe you can answer the question that Tom posed, and we started talking about knights, which is why it lasted so long. Mm-hmm. But other than knighting people, what does the king or queen get to do and live in a castle? Aside from those two things, what do they get to do?
I think you've probably pretty much covered it. apart from the obvious tourism draw, that's a big thing.
Yeah. Prince Charles does quite a lot, because he's the what's the thing that the kids do? The it's not the Charles Foundation, is it? It's
the Prince of Wales Trust.
The Prince of Wales Trust, which it's like it's encouraging people. I think it's age 16 to 25 to do things. So if they have this idea of a job, of a business or a project or something they want to do, then Prince of Wales Trust can actually give them funding for it and assistance. Mm.
But he wouldn't necessarily have to be a prince to do that.
Exactly. I was about to say that. That's not a monarchy thing. That's just somebody who's high up that happens to have a foundation that they give money, money out.
But technically, Angelina Jolie does that stuff. You know? Yeah. And then she just adopts half of them, you know?
I'll tell you what, we'll swap you.
So if we were on video, did you just get smacked?
Sorry, what was that?
He was just asking if you got smacked for making the comment about wanting to have it. No? You agree?
We'd share our team, Julia.
Oh, yeah. So that was basically, we were just having, I was having the conversation that it just feels like they knight everybody. I mean, we were talking about the fact that Elton John is it has been knighted, yeah. You know, and... Mm-hmm. It's like, what's going on over there, really?
George Michaels was the one that confused me more than Elton John.
Yes.
But
and then he wasn't even... Oh, that was what started the discussion. And he wasn't even invited to the wedding.
Even though he's a knight.
Yes.
Who is?
George Michaels.
George Michaels, a knight?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was knighted.
Yeah, that's news to me.
Yeah, it obviously was, you know, quite a while
ago.
Yeah, it was, or it was a long time ago. Before, you know, he just started hanging out in public restrooms and other such things. I love, though, I got to say, though, I love the fact that he embraces that and pretty much just admits that he's a perverted old queen now and that he just embraces that. And I think it's awesome.
Well, he had an interview with Michael Parkinson, who's a very well-respected broadcaster over here in the UK.
Yeah.
And George Michael actually had an interview with him about a month or two after that famous restroom incident, where he basically just came out, pardon the pun, and said, you know, this is what I did. This is what was going through my head at the time. And even a video he brought out with one of his hits around the time was taking the piss out of the policeman that actually caught him.
Yeah.
And depicted that police officer in one of his music videos.
Yep.
To take the piss out of him.
I remember that. And he also did a guest appearance on the show Extras with Ricky Gervais, where he was actually doing his community service while he was talking to Ricky Gervais. He was like, you know, he was wearing the orange coat and he had the little poker stick where you pick up the trash in the park and stuff. And he was talking to Ricky Gervais while he was doing that. I thought that was pretty funny. You know, I mean, it's the same thing happened over here. I mean, with, God, what was even his name now? The guy who was in Four Weddings and a Funeral, and he got caught with he was dating.
Oh,
Hugh Grant.
There you go. Yeah, and I mean, he just basically went on all the talk shows and just sat there and sucked it up and let everybody make their jokes about him, and then it was over. You know.
Well, cynically, you could say it's all publicity.
Yeah, you could. at least he didn't do like
Eddie. Then again, going mad sort of work for some people. Like Charlie Sheen seems to have become quite popular for being a nut job, basically.
Yeah, but he embraced it to the point of annoyance.
Yes.
You know, like now it's like him and the Old Spice commercial guy. I am completely done with all of that. I don't need to ever hear about them ever again. I don't know if you guys know about the Old Spice commercials. The one where it's this thing where it was all done in one take, and it's this guy that just talks. He's like a handsome guy in the commercial, and while he's talking, like tons of scene changes and all this other like one take trickery gets done. And it was great when it first came out. Now everybody and their uncle does a commercial like that, and they're on like their fifth or sixth version of this commercial, and it's like, okay, I get it. You did it in one take. Move on.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry. See, now that's the type of rant that Doug was alluding to. You get me started on something, I just go. And oddly enough, it started because he brought up the hierarchy or the monarchy again. Hierarchy. Listen to me.
Hierarchy.
Well, so now let's move back to what we were talking about 10 minutes ago.
I forgot what it was now.
Well, we were just talking about...
It was your podcast.
We were talking about what drew you to Creative Commons and stuff, and I know that you mentioned AMP. Now, I remember AMP back in the day when it started, and you had also alluded to the PodSafe Music Network, which then originally, or then eventually turned into the company Mevio or Music... I mean, it turned into like 10 different things, but it's all the same... people. So tell us about your involvement in that, or what made you pursue that? Was it because of the usage of the Music Alley music library, or how did you become a part of that?
Sorry, I'm you cut out very briefly at the beginning.
Oh,
just become a part of what? Sorry.
Oh, the Association of Music Podcasting. How did you
it was absolutely nothing to do with the PodSafe Music Network. I'm aware that AMP's involvement in the formation of what became the PodSafe Music Network, but no, it was purely by accident, actually. It was around about the time where I started. It was around the time of the 25th episode, actually, which I made a very big deal of, my silver podiversary, as I called it at the time. And I wanted to find out if there were any organizations out there that I could associate myself with that could help me with podcasting. And I found two organizations. The first one was the UK Podcasters Association, which I think maybe a year and a half ago merged into the Open Rights Group. And the second one was the Association of Music Podcasting. Now, I didn't know about either of these organizations. They just said, if you want to find out more, send an email to this place. So I did that. The UKPA took about, I don't know, 3 months to come back to me. When I've actually decided to join, they then said, oh, you're about to become part of the ORG, and I lost my subscription fee, but that's a separate story altogether. And then I applied to join AMP, went through the membership process, and... You know, bang, all of a sudden I was a member of this association. I knew nothing about them. I didn't know what the membership was about. But and I, to be honest with you, I never really used the membership in the first year of being a part of it. It was just a case of, oh, I'm a member of AMP. I'll play their jingle on the show. I'll tell everybody I'm a member of the Association of Music Podcasting, because it sounded fairly cool and gave me what I felt a little bit of credibility. Of course, it doesn't.
Right.
Not to that extent anyway. But it was about a year into my membership of the association that I realized the value of who they are and how important they had become in the journey towards becoming a half-decent podcaster. Now I'm heavily involved in the association. I'm actually the membership secretary now, so, you know, what goes around comes around. But I think to answer your original question, how did I become involved with it? It was pure accident. It was just a case of, okay, who can help me make a better job of what I'm doing at the moment?
All right.
So I've been trying to figure out, this is totally off subject, but I've been trying to figure out like when George Michaels was knighted, and I think calling him Sir George Michael might be like it might be ironic. I don't know if he's actually a knight.
I will be honest, when you said that, I actually pulled up Wiki on it, and there was no mention of knighthood or
Sirring. There's several places where he's mentioned Sir George Michael, but I found like groups championing him becoming a knight, and so that's where I think it came from. So it's just been repeated over and over again, like on our podcast. And so people say Sir George Michael, even though, as far as I can tell, it doesn't look like he's actually been knighted. So anyway, just wanted to clear that up.
Never be.
Yeah, well, maybe he should be.
I think he should. I think the Faith album is one of the best albums ever.
If he's
going
to be knighted, though, I think he needs to use his real name, his Greek name.
What's his Greek name?
You know, we talked about it's like Georgios something. We talked about this.
Georgio Kyriakos Panayiou too.
Yeah. I love it. That's fantastic.
All right. Now that I've derailed it yet again, we can get back to AMP.
I think we.
I was listening out of one of the ears.
No, that's good. No, I was just going to ask too. Now I know that you guys use the non-commercial, no derivative license on your show. When you look for music, do you look for music specifically under that when you are playing it, or do you just use Creative Commons music in general?
When it comes to Creative Commons stuff, I will pick any license. We will pick any license because Caroline is actually now more of a frontline part of actually picking the music out rather than just researching it after I give her the tracks. I've got no minimum requirement of a specific Creative Commons license to play on the show. I think to restrict it to just certain licenses would be, well, foolhardy for want of a better phrase, because why would you want to limit the quality of the music just by the license in which they're presented by?
Okay.
For that's the same reason why we still play Podsafe music and not just specifically Creative Commons. As much as Creative Commons is a really good concept and I wholeheartedly support it, I think that there are other non-Creative Commons licensing models, if you want to call them that, that are as important, even though the freedom of use is not there. The freedom of distribution is, and allows us as podcasters to do what we want to do with it so that we can get the music out to the people that are listening to us.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that the Podsafe Music Network was not necessarily Creative Commons. I forgot about that.
Saying that it's foolhardy, I just want to mention that there's almost 50,000 albums on Jamendo and a ridiculous amount of stuff on Free Music Archive and stuff. So it could be done. I mean, I don't know how many tracks. A lot of them are EPs. So let's just say there's 4, because then the math gets easy. So that we're talking like 200,000 tracks. It's going to take a lot of podcasts to get through that. Now, I'm not trying to say that you should do that. I just want to be clear to listeners that there's a ton of stuff out there under Creative Commons. And Tom and I sometimes struggle because a lot of it's no derivatives. But, you know, when you're just looking at total counts on Jamendo and such like that, that's including the no derivatives. But there's just a ton of stuff out there. And I think the main thing is just, you know, being able to sort through it and
find. I mean, with Jamendo, one of the times when I was researching, there is a lot of stuff there, but one of the things that we do on our show is we tend to try and keep it a family-friendly one, so we try not to print swear words, so that discounts some of them.
Definitely.
We do
just
not.
Just out of interest, I was just going to ask, why is no derivatives a potential issue for you guys?
I'll let you take this one, Doug.
Well, there's a number of reasons, but I think the main reason sort of from at least from a podcasting point of view, is simply that there's no one else doing that. So there's the Libre FM, which is all sort of, free culture approved, open source, type licenses. Mm-hmm. And then there are you know, podcasts like Craig's Open Metalcast, which is just Creative Commons. And I think there's other creative, you know, only Creative Commons podcasts out there. But there's no one who sort of is really focusing on remixes or music that's...
Okay.
And I mean, there's probably a fair amount of electronic music out there that's like, hey, we're a remix show and stuff like that. But sort of the point, and I think from Tom and I's perspective, we're thinking about things more broadly than a remix being, hey, I'm going to cut this track up and put a different beat on it or something like that. We're also thinking about things like video. So we talked a lot about Nina Paley and her struggles to try to find audio or music, I guess, specifically for animations. I can't remember. Sita Sings the Blues is one of those animations.
Yes.
I can't remember the other one. I think there's two. But there's also things like the, you know, the Blender Foundation, and they have the Elephant's Dream. And again, I'm like blanking after the one. But there's all sorts of things out there where people can use music, but they can't use something under non-derivatives if they're making a derivative work, you know, such as a movie. So that's one of the things that's going on. And I don't know. I think, too, just being consistent, whatever we made it was. I mean, we could say, you know, it was just Creative Commons, but just so listeners know, you know, that there's a limit, like, You know, when you listen to our show that everything on there can be remixed. So just sort of having a cut and dry line makes it easier for people. And that's not to say that, I mean, LibreFM has their line as well. And you know, you guys are playing just PodSafe music. So there's sort of, there are multiple lines that can be drawn, and it's just a matter of whether the listenership, you know, what's important to the listenership and where you want to draw that line. So, I mean, obviously we've had people on before that don't do everything Creative Commons. So we're not super concerned about from that perspective. But yeah, that's pretty much. I don't know, Tom, if I think I covered everything, even though I hadn't initially set out to cover everything. I kind of just, it kept rolling off the tongue.
Yeah, and that was the first debate that we had when we first started the show, was whether or not to do that. And I agreed with it. I thought it worked out well, that it's, the whole concept is not only sharing, but building upon.
And I think, too, from our perspective, not so much as podcasters, but as music listeners, it sort of forced us to listen to new music rather than sort of staying in our box. And that's been, I found a lot of stuff that I might not have sort of spent the time to reach out and find it if I hadn't, if I had just been like, all right, this is No Derivatives, it's a great track, I'm going to toss it in, and be like, ah, this is No Derivatives, I got to look for something else. And then, so I end up finding two bands instead of one, just because I pushed myself to do that.
And oddly enough, the most of the time when I find stuff that is non-derivative is stuff where it's completely just a DJ doing it, or samples or something like that, and they make their music non-derivative. And it's like, your entire song is built off of derivatives. I always find that very strange, but more so in that type of community with the DJs and electronic, a lot of the music is non-derivative. So I think that's weird.
The other thing, and I'm sorry that we're kind of going on a soliloquy. This is what happens when you ask us questions.
But you're supposed to interview with us.
I know. one of the things that Tom brought up at the very beginning of the show, too, was like, well, it's a podcast. Is that a derivative work? So that's an interesting thought. And I think most people are, you know, in the camp, and Tom is now, that a podcast is not a derivative work. It's sort of a collection, but it's not presented as, you know, a work of art, in which case that, you know, it might be. But the interesting thing about that is, like, DJs who, you know, have a live performance, as it were, but all they're kind of really doing is playing people's tracks. But it's still sort of a performance in that performance art sense. So it's just another thing to think about. But anyway... Mm-hmm.
You say about whether a podcast is actually a derivative work or not. Somebody, I can't remember who it was that said it, but somebody that I was speaking to a few months ago was saying that if you are playing music that is no derivatives, you shouldn't even speak over the top the front of it or cut it off at the end. You should play it absolutely front to end in its entirety.
Hmm. Well, we don't talk over our songs or clip them. But that's just because we don't talk on the music shows that we do.
No, no.
But yeah, I mean, I mean, I don't think most people would sort of balk at that. But, I mean, I guess if you're going to stay true to the license, then that's what it says. I mean, you know, it's kind of silly at a certain perspective. I mean, you might say that that's fair use or something, at least in the States. I don't know. I think it's slightly different over there as far as the fair use laws. I don't know if you call it that. I think you have something similar, though.
We have a fair use law over here, which is heavily, heavily abused by a lot of people. The whole 30 seconds, you can use 30 seconds of a licensed item if you can prove that it was done for educational or research purposes rather than just playing 30 seconds of a track. I did actually play 30 seconds of a licensed track way, way back, probably pushing 3 years ago, when I was doing a comparison between a track by Blake Morgan, who is a Podsafe artist, and a track by Yes, who are absolutely definitely not Podsafe. The similarity between the two tracks, I felt that the fair use applied purely on the basis of I was demonstrating the similarity between the two tracks.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, that sounds like the actual definition of what you were doing it for.
Yeah.
You know, I would agree with
but
that.
But if I was just playing it because it sounded good and I wanted other people to hear it, I don't think that would justify as fair use.
Mm-hmm. Unless it was like a new band or something and you were like, you know, if you were educating the public about this band, it'd be probably a hard argument for a band like
that's
Yes.
Technically the gray area that MP3 blogs use. When they post MP3s on their sites, they're claiming that that's fair use because they're writing reviews about it, and that's how they're able to do it. Even though they still get shut down all the time for doing it, they can claim that it's journalistic and fair use in a sense.
They've got a more hard and fast law, it sounds like, than we do. Ours is very nebulous. There's
I think
no
it
sort of.
On... Sorry, I think it depends on how much of that MP3 is actually used. If they're putting the whole MP3 out, then no, that's probably a bit beyond it. But if you go to places like Amazon.com, for example, and they allow you to preview some of the tracks, you'll notice that those tracks are always 30 seconds long.
Hmm. Yeah, but I don't. What I'm saying specifically is I don't think there is a 30-second limit here. I think it's grayer. Okay. It's grayer than that. There, I don't think there's any sort of specific numbers. It's sort of, if it's for educational use, then fine. It's one of those, it's kind of laissez-faire, I guess, but sort of you just wait until somebody says you can't.
It can be that way, but here, the way that that you were talking about using it, we actually don't even have 30 seconds. It's 10. Can use 10 seconds of a song. So...
For any purpose or under fair use?
For any purpose. Before you are actually able to, have to pay for it, you can use 10 seconds of a song.
Mm. Okay. So,
I don't know why I know that, but I've heard that a couple of times over the years. I know that that's the case.
Yeah, and that's interesting because on places like Last.fm and stuff, there are 30-second clips, but I guess that the artists have... Because well, sure, you can't get 30-second clips of everything, so they've probably just said, hey, that's cool, you can do 30 seconds.
Yeah, usually I'm sure that some people will waive it, but like if you're on a radio show or television or something, you can use that, you can attempt to use that. I think you can only do it a set number of times, because if you try to do it twice, then they can claim that that's 20 seconds. So, it's not like you can go, oh, well, this will be our theme song, we'll just play 10 seconds of it every time, because no, that adds up each time that you do it. So... There are loopholes within the loopholes for both sides, I think, as far as using that. But one of the things I want to ask about, too, so you asked us about our license and we asked about yours, but what about your community? I know that you're more in the podcast realm, so you might have more of an awareness of, from where you are, of of a Creative Commons community. Could you tell us about that, if there is one, I guess?
I don't think there is one. Not that I'm aware of.
Huh.
I'd say in terms of Creative Commons and it's spread in the UK. I mean, you have got people like the Open Rights Group, who I think are the British equivalent of the Electronic Front, Freedom Frontier Foundation thingy, whatever they're called nowadays. But I don't think there isn't really an entity over here that is set out to promote Creative Commons other than Creative Commons themselves.
Okay.
If that's what you meant.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's the funny thing is everybody that we have on this, like, we meet lots of people that are involved in Creative Commons music and so on. And whenever we ask them that question, they're always like, I have no idea what it's like around here, or I don't know if anybody around here does it. But yet, we keep meeting people. So, I mean, they got to be somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's always really interesting that that's normally the answer, is they're like, no, there really isn't one here.
So the only people I think I know that are pioneers, not pioneers, who are really pro Creative Commons, are people like Dan Lynch from Rat Hole Radio, John the Nice Guy, people like that who make a big deal of promoting Creative Commons on their shows or their products. But other than that, I mean, I think if I wasn't in podcasting, if I wasn't involved with the likes of John Spriggs, I probably wouldn't know what Creative Commons is, which I think is a damning indictment into the ignorance of people here about Creative Commons.
So just to follow up on that a little bit, you know, you two, I guess, are the third and fourth people that we've interviewed from the UK. So counting you as one, that ties you with North Carolina. But we haven't even interviewed but one person from Wisconsin, which is where that Tom and I both live. So I guess if you count us, that means that Wisconsin has three as well. But I guess I'm saying that because even though you think that there's not sort of a lot of people that know, you're still number one on the list of people that we've interviewed. Now that can change, and that's skewed because people in England speak English. We've had people on from Italy and Germany, but
yeah.
Actually, I guess Germany has three if you count all of them as well.
Yeah, all of Hedvonica.
Yeah, all of Hedvonica. But so it depends on how you count. But England has four, if we count both of you separately. So you're still in the lead. You got the Germans this time.
Have that.
But like I said, it's skewed because of the language barrier. But it's interesting that you're number one in that. Admittedly, a small sample size, but yet you still feel that there's a lot of not a lot of people that know. Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the only person that has ever said anything about their, or maybe the only two that have ever said about, Creative Commons awareness were Mike Nutt and Paul Jones.
Mm-hmm.
It might just been one of them too.
I want to say it was just Mike.
Yeah, I think that might be correct. But we may not have asked Paul that question. I don't know. Anyway, that doesn't matter. But I just wanted to point that out, sort of that even though, like Tom said, we always sort of ask that. Well, actually, I don't think Tom said that.
Yeah, I did.
Did you? Okay.
That was like the whole Tom point said, of this conversation was that they always say that there isn't one.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was thinking about the question that wasn't on the list that you asked before that. That was the question that I was thinking in my head briefly. I was like, wait a second. Did he actually ask that? I was writing the notes under that question, or typing them.
I see.
Anyway, so that's just sort of a thought about, country, culture, region.
I'm going to bring this back to music real quick. Let's.
I never stop talking about music.
I know. So I just want to ask you guys now. Let's get a little nutty here. Now, as far as music goes, I know you don't necessarily always just play Creative Commons artists. Now, like, if you just, what kind of music do you listen to in general? It can be any kind. It can be Creative Commons. It can be, regular music. That sounded weird.
I'll let you go first.
Thanks, Madam Musil.
I've waffled a lot, so I'll let you go first.
Yeah, we tend to, rather than saying regular, we say mainstream. I think that's how we differentiate, isn't it, Dave? So mainstream-wise, we like bands such as Linkin Park, Evanescence, Meatloaf, which is more me than Dave.
Yeah, I don't get Meatloaf at all. One of the highlights of my life was in the 51st State when Meatloaf blew up. That really worked for me.
You came to me with for a live Meatloaf gig.
That's because you dragged me along. I had to go.
You enjoyed it, including your amazing feet.
What?
When he asked for a purple bra.
Oh, yeah. another quick tangent. Uh-huh. We went to a Meatloaf concert in London's Hyde Park. And right at the very beginning, apparently Meatloaf has this thing that his mic stand is like decorated with women's underwear. And he said, I need a woman's bra. And I think he actually said, really purple. And in the crowning achievement of my life, I reached out and went ping. And I was so chuffed that I managed to do that in one move without fluffing it, without getting tangled. It was a proud moment. It really was.
I do hasten to add that the bra stayed on. It did not go to the stage of Meatloaf.
We were quite a long way back. I think he had some other people at the front that were more willing to pass their wares.
Yeah, so mainstream were quite eclectic. Including one with nipple tassels. Let's not go there. Independent, people like Mark Marshall, Matthew Ebel, Matt Stevens, Nick Tan, Jordan Rain.
You wouldn't guess we've written these down, would you?
No. And Creative Commons, we've got like Antares, Diablo Swing Orchestra, which I really love. Mm. I don't know if you've heard those. They're an avant-garde Swiss metal. Swedish metal band, sorry.
I guess Swiss and Sweden would be two different things, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Tom.
I don't know anything.
Tenpenny Joe, Rob Warren. So, yeah.
Sweden or Swedes, Tom?
I don't know. I've barely left the state. I don't know anything about the world.
But I think on a day-to-day basis, I mainly listen to PodSafe or Creative Commons because I tend to load up my iPod now with podcasts and Creative Commons or independent music, which is great because when I'm traveling on the bus and people trying to play their own music to everybody, which is usually really rubbish music, I can drown them out.
Over here in the UK, we have music charts, same as you do over there with like the Billboard charts.
Right.
And every so often, I happen to stumble upon, by accident, mind you, chart music. And I listen to it and I'm thinking, why? Seriously, why? Why is the material that is selling and successful here in the UK, I would imagine it's probably the same abroad as well, so successful, but it is utter crap. Whereas the Creative Commons stuff, the stuff that we and you and a lot of other people are trying to promote, of independent artists, people that have never been heard of before, is going unlistened. Whereas the quality, both musically and technically, is far, far superior. And I've never yet been able to understand why it is. Okay, if I wasn't podcasting, I wouldn't be asking this question because I wouldn't know about this music, which, again, is the sad part of it. But we go out of our way to try and highlight some of these artists, not just through the podcast, but also through social networking and friends at work. Somebody says to me, oh, I like a bit of dubstep. I say, oh, have you ever heard of Secret Archives of the Vatican, for example? And they say, no, who are they? And I'm thinking, bloody hell, fire. These are such high quality. I'm getting all passionate now, you can tell.
Yeah,
these are such high quality artists, some great, raw, free, creative music. And nobody's heard of it.
But we've had this conversation before. We wonder whether a lot of the artists that we're so passionate about, if they ever did become mainstream, would they still have the same hold? Because they won't necessarily have the same control over their own music if they're being run by a radio, you know, a proper music label.
That is down to the label they decide to saddle themselves with. A lot of the Creative Commons artists that are out there are either unsigned, independent, sorry, unsigned or on independent net labels. But the moment they sign themselves to a mainstream label, then they start to lose elements of their creativity that make them who they are.
Because I don't think they would have the same...
And they become more commercial. They become more, this is what we think as a label or as a publisher, what you should be doing to get money in. But it's not about making money. It's about making music. And it's that, purely that, and the mere fact of the charts is about record sales.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you're measuring success of music on record sales, you're in the wrong business. It's not what it's about. It's about the music. It's about the art and the technical excellence that it... I'm getting too passionate now. That is what this music is all about, and no bugger knows about it. That is what is so frustrating.
Well, and it's even gotten to the point, too, where a lot of artists after they have... Well, not a lot, but a handful of artists after having gotten signed will go back to the way that they were because they'll realize, like, oh, this isn't the way I want to do it. You mean I can't do it the way that... And these are, you know, are artists that were discovered online, like, say, your OK Go's, which even though I don't really care for OK Go, I like what they've done, what they've accomplished.
That's one of Caroline's favorites.
Well, just because of the treadmills,
yeah.
Treadmill thing.
Yeah. The video.
Yeah, and the music itself.
They do very good beats.
Yeah, and well, they liked doing what they did, and they thought of ideas, they thought of music, they did what they wanted to do with it. Then they got signed because everybody was like, oh my God, everybody's talking about this band and they're not signed. Let's sign them. They were signed for not even a year and they left their label because they're like, this is ridiculous. They won't let us do what we want. So now they're exactly. back to being an independent. Another one is one that I've mentioned before, Laura Palmer. Not Laura Palmer. Sorry, I've been watching the Twin Peaks episodes on Netflix.
Amanda Palmer.
Oh. she just recently got out of her Roadrunner Records label contract because they wouldn't let her release things when she wanted or do things the way she wanted or sell her stuff only on the website digitally, et cetera, stuff like that. And then she went off on her own. They let her out of her contract, and she just did a world tour, I believe, all completely self-promoted by herself just through, fan bases and Twitter and Facebook accounts and just communicating directly with the fans and, like, doing things the way she wanted. And she had a pretty successful world tour and even just recently did an album with Neil Gaiman. Was one of the...
Right.
Yeah, it was called the 8 and 8. Or something like that. And, oh, I wanted to mention this. A little self-plug here for me. She was on the Rethink Music Conference that happened recently. And they announced the release of that album where the 8 and 8 was, they wrote 8 songs in 8 hours or something like that. It was her, one of the dudes from OK Go. Wow, this actually went full circle. And Neil Gaiman and, I want to say, the only Ben Folds. So they sat down at this conference and wrote 8 songs in 8 hours. So then they announced it and did a song. I was watching it streaming while I was at work. And then I posted online. I was like, oh, that's great she released the album, but I'm sad to see that it was not released under Creative Commons because the entire concept of this conference was, you know, owning your music and doing things the way that you want to as an artist and the way that you can live without, record labels or the need to do it the old traditional way. And within an hour, I got a response from her on Twitter after I had said that. And she was just like, oh, you're right. I should think about that. And then other people started chiming in too and saying things like, why would she do that? Because the money, the first dollar, or she was selling it for a dollar. And the first week, all the money that she got for that was going to be going to the Berklee School of Music for their program. So they were like, that means less for charity. And then I responded back saying, no, I'm not saying that she shouldn't sell it. I'm saying that she should make it so that people know that they can share it, distribute it, or use it and build upon it for other things like videos and, you know, remixes and things like that. Of course, I said it in 140 characters or less, but, you know, that's the gist of it. And
you weren't like, screw you, you're wrong. That's under 140 characters, right?
So, no, but I wanted to explain that I wasn't saying like, oh, because that's the misconception is people always think that means free. That means that you can't sell it. And so that's what I said. And then the person even the next day, the person who I was having this conversation back and forth with sent me a message and said, hey, guess what? It's under Creative Commons today. And it turns out that Amanda Palmer actually, you know, listened to what we were saying and then the next day put the entire album under Creative Commons. So I just wanted to take credit for that one right there.
I have a quick question. You know, you were talking about mainstream. How would you define mainstream exactly? Just because, like, there's a classic definition of an independent label, which is not a member of the I or the RIAA here. But Epitaph Records has had a lot of successful acts while they've been independent. Like The Offspring sold 16 million, you know, units of Smash alone while they were on an independent label. So I'd suggest that anyone that sells 16 million records is mainstream, whether they're on an independent record or not. I'm not disputing one way or the other, really. I'm just wondering what your definition, what your personal definition of that is.
Our definition in that respect was wrong then. When we say mainstream, we're on about
the type of acts that would appear on commercial radio.
Yeah, commercial radio stations, not things like BBC's Introducing, which is all about unsigned acts. But we're talking about the acts that are signed up to the however many are left big labels and would appear at Glastonbury and stuff like that.
But Glastonbury, well, lots of it. Jordan Rain was Glastonbury.
Glastonbury used to be about independent artists or indie music, but you know, when you get people like U2 turning up to Glastonbury, I think that right. defeats the object. But no,
that's because mainstream acts have cottoned on to how
When we're talking mainstream, we're talking about commercially successful artists that are
and usually the ones that are in the singles
singles charts, and those that have maybe lost an element of their creative freedom as a direct result. So not fully independent artists.
Cool. I was just curious. Like I said,
there's a gray area there. There's a very, very narrow line between.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mainstream, I'm on about, you know, the known bands, the bands that everybody knows about.
Right. Cool. Because it's an interesting thing, you know, talking about mainstream versus not mainstream when you're talking about, you know, CC stuff. Like, we've played Nine Inch Nails on our shows before, which is definitely a mainstream artist, but they've also released, you know, a couple Creative Commons albums. So, you know, further, you know, and I don't think they're on a label at all anymore, but that doesn't make them any less mainstream. So it's just a weird...
Hasn't Trent Reznor now got a side project? I can't remember what it's called. Somebody...
With his wife is the singer.
That's right, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Right.
I can't remember the name of it.
I love the fact that we all know that he's done it, but none of us know what it is.
somebody played it recently on a podcast. I cannot remember
for the life of me,
who it was. It was Colin, yes.
It was Colin.
But I can't remember,
the name.
What it was called.
Does it just basically sound like Nine Inch Nails with a woman singing?
No.
I'm assuming that she's singing. I don't know why.
It's very, very different from what you would typically expect.
To hear that.
It's post-industrial. Go ahead.
Yes. Obviously, we've played some acts that we played? I Wanna Fight for You, right?
Oh, Beastie Boys.
Beastie Boys.
Because they've released certain stuff under Creative Commons.
Right, we've played the Phineas and Ferb theme.
Chuck D.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Released some Creative Commons stuff. You mentioned Bowling Pursuit. They're not Creative Commons, though.
No, but they were Aerial, weren't they? So.
Still
kudos because they did the Phineas and Ferb.
I mean, we've managed to play some mainstream stuff on the show because they've either released through IODA, which I have to admit we don't hardly use at all, but it's only because I think it was 808 State. Had a track on IODA, so I just had to sort of take him up on that one and get it played. I think we've even played a Duran Duran hit on the show legitimately because they were on Mevio. If there's a song on there that I like, I'll just go and play it.
One of their 10 million reunion albums that they've done? I mean, I swear to God, every other year I hear them getting back together as a reunion, and it's never the full band. There's always someone missing. I don't understand. And then it's like, which Simon Le Bon are you going to get? Are you going to get the large Simon Le Bon? Are you going to get the I'm working out and possibly doing drugs again Simon Le Bon? You know, it's, I always find it fascinating. And it's, I don't know. They just always keep showing up. Sorry, mini rant.
I have one thing to mention before we, I'm assuming, start to wrap things up. The name of that band is How to Destroy Angels, the one with Trent Reznor's wife, which is Queen Meng Dig. And their genres, as listed on Wikipedia, are post-industrial, experimental, and electronica.
Mm.
So,
but she has a cracking voice, which is part of the reason why I can't relate it to Nine Inch Nails, because it just doesn't sound anything like it.
Hmm.
So I think we have one more question, Tom, unless you have something else.
No.
And that question is, if there's anything else the two of you would like to mention, promote, ask, whatever, this is your free time, as it were.
Well, I think it would be daft of us to not take that opportunity up and say that the Bugcast does broadcast weekly on a Friday night at 9 p.m. UK time, 9:30 p.m. UK time, and you can reach us at thebugcast.org.
Hey, that's why we asked that question.
Yeah.
So
we've got a couple of other projects that we may be doing.
Really?
We've recently found out that our local area, Doncaster, has quite a lot of independent musicians. So we may actually do a podcast specifically for the area.
Yes, called Doncast.
Hmm.
We live in Doncaster.
We've also been considering one called Chew the Fat, which is just basically us talking and going over.
Maybe that's what we should call our talk shows, Tom, is the Chew the Fat show.
Well, you're just you're telling them right now we're just going to steal their name?
No. This is the Music Manumit Chew the Fat show. Oh, totally different.
Yeah, you're right.
We were inspired by...
Because you said earlier on, you had us in stitches. You said that every so often you just sit down and shoot the shit.
Yeah.
And I thought that is just a fantastic alternative, not very family friendly alternative to shoot the fat. Thought, yeah, we'll have that one.
And I've been mulling over doing one called Musical Notes.
Musical?
Musical Notes, yes, because musical is my nickname.
Right. I just wanted to make sure that that's why you were saying that, and not and not just a thick, you know, British accent.
No, musical.
That would be good for Wisconsin, the musical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, when I chose musical, for ages I was the only thing online called musical, but now VTech have brought out something called Musical B, just like a little cartoon cow with an ABC. So now whenever you search for musical, you get that.
You know,
we actually had it as well for the kids.
I was just going to say, for kids, you should make like a kids one. Where you do children's music, and you can call it Susical the Musical, or Musical. So that way you'd be building off of, you know, Susical the Musical, but you'd be Musical. Sorry, I'm thinking out loud here.
It sounded better before you said it, right?
It really did. It really did. I was hearing it milliseconds before it was coming out of my mouth, and I was like, this is going to be funny. But it wasn't. And so... Oh,
I have. I actually have her mentioning the other projects made me think of two things that I wanted to mention actually, before we thank Dave and Caroline here and let them go to bed, I'm guessing, at this point of the night. but we actually have a new show that I don't think we've mentioned, and that's our new punk cast, and that's punk.musicmanumit.com. So people can check that out. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about that more at a later date. And also, I just really want to thank Amsterdam Mac on Identica, because he went through all of our old shows and put them on Last FM and like tagged the artists so that our podcast would show up on. And I don't know if he went through and did Rat Hole Radio yet, but you guys, if you don't know Amsterdam Mac, you should totally get him listening to your show, because he is ridiculously awesome
at
helping out with stuff.
And if you'd like to catalog all our shows on
I couldn't believe it. Like, he was just saying, hey, this isn't down there. And we were both like, oh, yeah, that's one of those things where it's like, we should have done it, and now it might be too late because it'll take too long. And then he was just like, I couldn't sleep last night, so I did it. And I went and looked, and it's like, there it is. I'm like, oh, my God. Really?
If it's been a bit of struggle what to do, just point him in our way, and we'll...
All right,
put him to work. Cool. All right. Well, I want to thank you two as well. This has been awesome. It's always good to have people on that's just an easy conversation, and you don't even feel like it's been, you know, an hour and a half or whatever it's been. So.
Yeah, I know. I've just seen that.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, and hopefully we talk to you again soon. Let us know about your the projects that you had mentioned when they're coming out or after they come out. You know, keep us in the loop.
So, yeah, we definitely will. Thanks for letting us on here. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's been great.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you very much. And this has been the Music Manumit Podcast at musicmanumit.com.